Hey there, veterans. This is Justin with a quick note before today's episode. Especially timely given the subject today, our guest today is going to talk about a lot of books. There's over 10 different books on the show notes today. And if you'd like to be able to read more and just do it on the go, Audible is a great resource for that. They are giving Beyond the Uniform listeners one free book when you sign up for a free trial. There's no obligation to do anything else. You can keep that book and cancel it anytime. If you go to beyondtheuniform.com/books, you'll find that offer, and you'll find a list of all the different books that my guests have recommended on the show. Thanks and enjoy the episode. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 86 with Joe Musselman, founder of the Honor Foundation.
They have no issue negotiating a Syrian and a Kurd ceasefire in the mountains unarmed with warlords. But if you tell them, hey, what's next for you? They don't know how to do that because they've been very front side focused on the mission in front of them for 5, 10, 15, 20 plus years. So from that moment, it all began for THF.
Well, today's a very cool episode. I'm talking with Joe Musselman, and first of all, it's very rare to find someone where their name matches their career profile so well. Joe founded the Honor Foundation, and it's designed to help Navy SEALs and members of the Special Operations community with professional development, with the transitioning assistance, helping them and preparing them for their next career. It's not just an episode for aspiring or current Special Forces members. I think there's a couple things that anyone could learn from this. First of all, Joe's founding story of the Honor Foundation. He's just got a great story of just doing one simple thing to help a veteran and how one thing leads to another, and that when you combine passion and obsession and massive action to anything, it can lead to growing an organization, which is very cool to see. He talks about finding your dream job, a formula that he's used at the Honor Foundation that's helped hundreds of different people from Special Forces in their transition process, and I think it'd help any listener as well. And I think that Joe's just a great example about learning. He talks about all the books he reads and how at the end of each year, after picking a theme and reading books on that, like happiness or artificial intelligence, at the end of the year, he'll write a white paper to kind of summarize what he's learned. And I think it's a great example of a continued commitment to constant learning. So whether you're a SEAL, Special Forces, or everyone else who I think secretly aspires to be that, but you know, even us submariners, I think deep down we want to do that, but we didn't, regardless of what you did in the military or are doing right now, I think you get to learn a lot from this episode. So please enjoy my conversation with Joe Musselman. Well, joining me today in San Diego, California is Joe Musselman. Joe, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you so much for having me, Justin.
So I wanted to give listeners a quick background on Joe. He is the founder and CEO of the Honor Foundation. He started out at DePaul University, and he enlisted in the Navy with intentions of becoming a Navy SEAL, but as he says, God had other plans. He sustained an injury that ultimately led him to found the Honor Foundation. He's also the founder of the Next Series and the SOF Garage. So, let's start maybe there, Joe, with you talked about God having other plans for you. Take us through your unexpected transition from the Navy.
Sure. So, yeah, you want to make God laugh, you tell him about your plans, right? So for me, you know, I was the 16th man in my family to join the United States military in uniform in some capacity. So longstanding tradition in my family. My junior senior year at DePaul University, I had a chance to study abroad and essentially go to every Middle Eastern country. And that's where I met my first Navy SEAL. And when I went abroad and had the opportunity to kind of go to the platoon space and hear the way they spoke to each other and talked and communicated and the types of missions they were involved in, I had been considering going OCS into the Marine Corps. And instead, once I met that first Navy SEAL, that's exactly where my mind was made up. So I went on a training kind of spree. I was not designed to swim. I was designed to sink. I was not designed to run fast for far. I can do short distances. I pole vaulted in high school, so it's only about a 50-meter run. But at the same time, I needed to do both fairly well and quickly, so I did what anyone would do. I just signed up and immersed myself in triathlons for a year. Did an endurance run of 50-plus miles to try to get myself prepared for, the physical hardship and the mental requirements to just make it through basic underwater demolition SEAL training, which is called BUDS. Unfortunately, about 2 years into my training, I sustained a spine injury. So I was in training in the morning, and then I was out of training in the evening. And it was past a percentage medically where I could ever, it's not that I couldn't even be a SEAL, but I could even remain as a sailor. So to me, my service career to the United States was over that quickly. And that was a very jarring transition for me. And the Honor Foundation was kind of born out of the events that took place there. And if you want to know the first day that the Honor Foundation was founded, I had written a letter to the XO and CO, the commanding officer, executive officer of the Naval Special Warfare Command, asking if I could just stay on base. And they said that I could. I wanted to stay and do my rehabilitation there at the Naval Special Warfare Center in Coronado versus a larger Navy facility. I wanted to be where I wanted, where I was, dreaming to be for quite some time the years before. And so as I'm there, I was given a job inside of admin, and admin, the role itself was unique. It's where everyone came to turn in their separation packages, their retirement papers, whether it was medically or just separating under honorable terms. I got to see these faces come in every day. And I got to know this Master Chief very well. And this Master Chief in the SEAL community, for those of you who understand ranking, a Master Chief is senior, top of the food chain, top of the totem pole. He was a four-time command Master Chief, and that's unheard of in any community. He was the iconic Navy SEAL. He was on Development Group Team 6 for 12 years, the team that doesn't exist, but we all know that it does. He spoke French and Farsi. He was a seven-time Ironman. He parachuted into Kona for the World Championships. He's a surfer. By the way, he has his master's degree, and he can fly fixed-winged aircraft. I mean, this is a total just freak of nature in the best way. And of course, he's a kind man, and I learned a lot of great life lessons from him. But he was the first person that really began a friendship with me after my injury, and I got to know him very well. I got to know his girlfriend, now wife, very well, and he invited me to his retirement ceremony. It was the most moving speech that unsuspecting speech about his retirement speech was about diversity in the teams, hoping to see, women running around the SEAL team soon, saving their asses. And, it was just not, it was unexpected, the things that he spoke about leaving the teams after 26 years, a brilliant man, quoting everything from Socrates to Plato to Steve Jobs in his speech. I was moved. The next day, he came into the admin office and he closed the door. He looked at me and he said, 26 years in the SEAL teams, what am I going to do now? And the man was crying. And I could not figure that out. And I looked at him like any American would do in that moment. And you just want to help. Like, how do I stop the suffering that this guy's, this is an American hero by definition, by anyone's definition. This man has done more for this country than most people could dream of doing in seven lifetimes, six Bronze Stars, all with combat valor. We're talking Silver Star, awarded by the president, and this man is weeping. He's crying because he doesn't know what's next for him. So if anyone wants to know when THF was born or out of what and why, it was my selfishness in that moment to say, oh, my God, well, what is next for you? Who is supporting you? What organizations exist to serve specifically the Navy SEAL community? And we started talking, and I just said, well, where's your resume, and what about your LinkedIn profile? And LinkedIn profile, this man had been serving underground for 20-plus years, not telling people what he did or how he did it or where he has been in the world, and now he's supposed to put everything on a public profile to get recruited. So it's commonly overlooked. People look at me funny when I say that the Honor Foundation serves the top 1% of veterans all over the world. well, why do we need to serve the top 1% of our veterans? You know, aren't they capable enough to serve themselves? Of course, they have no issue negotiating a Syrian and a Kurd ceasefire in the mountains unarmed with warlords. But if you tell them, hey, what's next for you? They don't know how to do that because they've been very front side focused on the mission in front of them for 5, 10, 15, 20 plus years. So from that moment, it all began for THF. And from that moment, I'll fast forward through the details just so we can get to other questions. But from that moment, I worked on one resume for him, which eventually the rumor spread that I was like the resume guy. And I did 100 more resumes in the next 90 days. When I left my rehabilitation, I asked those guys for recommendations of their teammates in the private sector who have transitioned out. And I interviewed, when I left rehab, I interviewed 215 plus Navy SEALs in 7 states in 6 months, blew through savings, did what it took to make sure that I got all the information, classic design thinking, first step, empathize with the community you want to serve, right? So that's what I did. And on the other side of the bridge, I had to interview a lot of organizations, a lot of companies. So I interviewed 151 Fortune 500 companies at the C-suite level, founder level, or VP level or higher inside of an organization. I only wanted to speak with leadership because leadership trickles down. So who I was talking to in the leadership, it would give wonderful insight to how the culture was beneath them. And after that, I interviewed around 50 veteran service organizations who said they did things along the lines of transition. I pieced all of that information together. And what we have now and created nearly 31 months later is a 15-week extensive program with 3 major components: executive education, professional development, and one-on-one executive coaching. Our guys go through, and girls go through a program that is 120 plus hours of those 3 components, 27 different learning modules over a 15-week program. We opened up our second campus in Virginia Beach, the second major exit point for Navy SEALs and special operators, the first being in San Diego, California. And now we're moving towards our 3rd location to take care of the Special Forces component, Delta component, and that unit, I should say, in North Carolina by the end of this year. So we will be the first organization supporting a special operator as he transitions out at scale across the country in the history of special operations.
That's great, man. I mean, there's a couple things that jump out. I mean, first, I just want to appreciate the situation you must have been in where you had this grand dream and ambition and this just catastrophic injury that completely changed the way that you would plan to spend the next couple of years. And so I can just imagine if I was in that situation, there would be so much self-pity and just kind of looking inwards. And so I just think it's incredible to think that in that moment is when you make this connection in a way and then want to help someone else. And I think I just imagine that would be difficult to do, of just dealing with everything going on in your own life and then having the resources to want to look out for someone else. And what I really love about your story is that I think a lot of people who have the goal of starting an organization, they feel like it needs to be some preconceived notion or this epiphany that comes. And I love that it seems like you just did the job before you. You were just looking at one resume and helping one person strictly to give back. There was no intention of a business here. And then that led to other people hearing about this, and that led to this thought of like, wow, like there's more people who need this. Maybe there's something more here. But I think that makes entrepreneurship a lot more accessible to a lot of listeners to realize that it can just be like one small step of giving back after another, leading to something that's very compelling.
Justin, I could not agree more with what you just said, and this was the best lesson ever. And, you know, if you think about why I joined the military, it was to serve others. And so as I worked with, you know, Simon Sinek to develop our why as an organization, and our why is to serve others with honor for life, so their next mission is always clear and it continues to impact the world. Now, you start with one example, and just like every great startup and every great entrepreneur, Mark, you know, Zuckerberg, he was just trying to look at a girl's status. there a way to do that? That was a problem for him. And then it became, I want to connect with others. Now look at what happened. But it was slow growth. You know, he started in the Ivies, and then he moved on to all EDUs, and now everyone knows Facebook. It's the same thing with Airbnb. They started with a single problem. They wanted to find space and rent a rent out a bed, an air bed, and breakfast for one day. So I think you're absolutely right that all the great businesses that we see grow, and especially in the tech field, these high growth, tech startups, it all starts from solving a very simple problem. And they realize that they're not the only ones that have that problem.
Mm. I'm wondering, how long have you been doing the Honor Foundation now?
We just entered into our 31st month.
Wow. I'm just wondering, one of the things I wanted to, I always like to learn about is about mistakes or about failures. And I think it's important because, one, it's so much, especially for entrepreneurship, of how one, how someone learns. But two, I feel like it's sometimes in opposition to a lot of people's military training where failure is catastrophic. And in the civilian mm-hmm. career, it's not only not catastrophic, it's necessary to really achieve something great. And so I'm wondering if you have any thoughts of like a big mistake or failure or challenge that you faced in starting the Honor Foundation and what you learned from that.
Great question. I get asked that a lot. If you want to move fast, move alone. If you want to move far, move as a team. So that's like a very common phrase. And I think all truth in this question specifically, it's very universal in that you really have to pay attention who you choose to spend your time with as you're starting up an organization. So from the very beginning, you're excited. I don't understand the concept behind let's keep ideas quiet. Someone might take them. That's highly unlikely that someone is going to take your idea and have as much passion about it as you. It's just statistically highly unlikely. How are you going to know if it's a good idea if you're not talking about it with others? So for me, in the beginning, I would talk about this concept with everyone and just so I could get massive feedback, but I grew a network very quickly, but I wasn't paying attention to the overall quality and capacity of the network that I was building. So earlier this year at the NASDAQ, I talked about this a little bit because it's so important in the beginning stages of an entrepreneur's life to pay attention who they surround themselves with from day one. So there are many mistakes that I made in regards to network and who we surrounded ourselves with in the beginning. And I couldn't have that because consider the network that we're serving, the community we're serving. It's literally a community that is drowning in honor and integrity and morals and ethical principles. I could not have people coming into our ecosystem that didn't have the same type of intentions. So like rule number one is like, pay attention who you interact with because they become a part of you and your mission, and you need to make sure that you hold tight and true the mission that you're trying to propel into the future.
That's great. And I also want to make room. I'm just if someone listening, it wants to be involved with the Honor Foundation, what does it look like if someone is coming from special forces and would like to engage with you guys, like to work with you guys? What does that process look like?
So our website is a major tool for us. I considered it a wonderful investment to really use and build a Salesforce from day one on Salesforce, the platform itself, and our foundation is utilizing it more and more every day. But we don't know how to connect with our potential operators until they fill out an application. And we have something called Tribes at THF. You go to our website, honor.org. And you'll notice that there are three little green blocks that are going to stalk you throughout the entire site. It's going to be donate, join us, and apply. And when you click on one of those, it'll take you down, somewhat of a drip campaign of getting you the information that you need so that we know how to connect with you. If you're a soft operator and you want to come to our program, you click on apply, and you must fill out the entire application and hit submit so that we know on our end that you can connect with us. for the actual program. If you would like to make a donation, click on donate, and you can choose exactly what you'd like to contribute to inside of our business. If you'd like to join us, if you'd like to become a mentor, if you would like to become a coach for our guys inside the program, if you would like to be an employer partner of the Honor Foundation, we have a process for all of that. So for me, the one thing I learned from interviewing 50-plus nonprofits in the veteran space is I hired a chief of people, and a very talented person. His name is Philip Dana out of the Naval Academy, but had a very private sector career for many years. Everyone at THF is from the private sector with no nonprofit background. They went for profit to for purpose, and they did that for a reason. When you look at, we're trying to organize our volunteer force like a workforce, which means they need job descriptions. They need expectation setting. We want goals. We want them to be included inside of our objectives and key results setting for the year. So if you want to join the ecosystem and the family at Honor Foundation, you have to give a commitment. And it's the three T's, either time, treasure, or talent. We're looking for that constantly. That's how we recruit. Are you willing to give time, treasure, or talent? And most likely, everyone that gets involved, they get so much from the experience, they end up giving more and more and more. So for us, nothing happens unless those folks interact with our mission and meeting the community we serve. So if you want to get involved, that's how you do it. Honor.org, and you choose your path.
I love it. And I love, you know, in your story of starting this organization, I love this. You know, they talk about entrepreneurs having a bias for action, and I love that you make this decision and you interview 150 different organizations and you just go after it, and it's massive action accompanying this decision. And I'm curious, for veteran listeners who are thinking of starting their own company or aspire to start their own organization, what advice do you have for them?
other than let's get something on the calendar for like a weekend retreat. There's so much, and nothing happens in a startup unless you happen. So the first step is to do. You need to throw yourself all into this. You can't kind of be an entrepreneur. There's just no such thing. And there's a great book by Adam Grant called The Originals. And he talks about, you know, the best, most successful entrepreneurs are the ones who are actually most risk averse, the folks who are being very calculated about risk mitigation throughout a startup. And I would agree with that 100% over again. So making sure that you have the right planning procedures in place for how you want to get the information around your business is really important. But it can't be halfway. You need to be all in. You know, that's the one thing that I've learned. I've done a lot of interviews with different entrepreneurs, and especially in the tech space, because it's just a fascinating place to be, no doubt changing the world every day. And everything you learn from a Brian Chesky at Airbnb to, to a Zach Bookman at OpenGov, these folks are just obsessed. So unless you could tell yourself that you are obsessed and you feel an obsession about solving a real world problem, that, by the way, money never comes into the equation, ever, when you initially start a business. It should be about a passion. It should be about an obsession. And the example I always use is one of my favorite entrepreneurs to just read about and follow and study is Walt Disney. And something that he used to say, I mean, in my mind, he didn't say, I want to become a billionaire. He said, I want to create the happiest place on earth. That's a bold goal. And the man was obsessed. So unless you feel that obsession, then maybe entrepreneurship isn't for you, because you can't kind of be an entrepreneur. The work is too hard. It's too long. It takes too big of a toll on your family and your lifestyle that if you're not driven by something much bigger than yourself, you will fail.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I love that thought, because it does become all consuming, and it's something that if you're not willing to invest everything that you are, it's just, I just finished Phil Knight's from Nike, autobiography. And you just read that and you see this guy, he poured everything he was into that company, and everyone he hired did the same thing. And that's the only way they made through it. And even Nike, you know, the first 18, 20 years, they were just living paycheck to paycheck and barely making it. And you feel like, man, in order to endure that, this has to be more than just a job. It has to be, like you said, an obsession. And one thing I wanted to ask about too is that one of the things I like about your background is that you are in a position where you've helped so many veterans throughout the years that you've been in operation in helping their career transition. And I'm wondering if there's any trends that stand out in terms of common mistakes that you see veterans make in their career transition, or any sort of common misconception that they may have about their future civilian career.
Yeah, you're asking great questions. This is fantastic. So this is what I can speak to the special operations community, which is indicative of the much larger veteran community as well. But at the same time, this is a unique community. But I can say this: veterans in this community are exceptional. They are extraordinary. I was in a boot camp division with former professional athletes, four-time academic All-Americans, former Olympic swimmers, physics majors, chemist majors from University of Texas. It's just a different breed of warrior professional inside this community. So the difficulty that I have with this group is if you are in a CHR of an organization or just a talent acquisition or HR person, and you put out a job description, you're going to get 1,000 job applicants all applying for that one role. They all feel they have the experience. They all feel that they have the background to do this one job. In special operations, we're going to flip that funnel around where we have this one soldier, airman, or Marine. And what we see is that one special operator could do technically 1,000 different jobs. So what we have to do is we have to narrow the funnel down throughout our 15-week program. And now I'm speaking to all veterans. This is the process you must take. Yes, I would say it's factual that veterans could do hundreds, if not thousands, of different jobs. But you're asking yourself the wrong question initially, which is, who has my dream job? And the minute a veteran puts their mind to a who, they start putting a name to now their vision, because that name and that person comes with a profile, comes with a background that could be tracked and understood to give you insight, the veteran, as to how to move forward in that direction. So for us, we don't say, what job do you want? That's a horrible question. If somebody asked me what job I want right now, outside, I would have no idea. But I know people who are doing things that inspire me. So the first step is to, one, find out who has your dream job. Number two, now you have to focus in on a specific industry. What industry is, are making advancements in the world that match with your why? Like, as you figure out what inspires you, we have all of our fellows develop their why statement, because you're not trying to match a need, a requirement, a job description or salary to a job description and salary in the private sector. You're trying to match your personal why statement with that of an organization that matches with your mission, your principles, your vision, and what you consider your values. Once you do that, it almost doesn't even matter where you go inside the organization, because you're inside of an organization that believes what you believe. And so for getting veterans to understand this concept, thinking that, oh, I've got to put on a suit, I have to go, I have to make $180K this year, otherwise, this is going to happen. Well, it's funny that our fellows, when they don't focus on the number, we have there's a subgroup I picked out for this last graduation. I picked out four graduates, and I averaged their salaries together and what they're making, the ones who just focused on their why and their values, and the average salary is $153,000 for those four fellows. That's $26,000 more than the average salary coming out of a Harvard MBA. So before, they didn't have that type of vision and focus. Now they do. So my one advice to veterans is, forget salary. Don't think about it. Begin to love yourself and understand yourself. Begin to re-know your family again and what they need and what their requirements are. Mesh all that together to define your why and match that why and those values with a company in the private sector. That's exactly how you make a successful transition.
I love that too. I think it's a good reminder of just the very subtle changes you can make that open up a world of possibilities. And like you said, with like that example
Absolutely.
Of your, what is your ideal dream job versus who, it just frames the question in a slightly different way, but that has a massive impact on opening it up to very tactical, actionable steps. And I love the way that you break down what's a very unknown and daunting task for some of the most courageous men alive, and you make it much more accessible and doable. What you know, as the founder and the CEO of the Honor Foundation, what does your day-to-day life look like right now? Especially for, I think it's helpful for other aspiring entrepreneurs or someone who wants to start their own organization to get that taste of what life looks like.
Well, obviously it depends on, you know, it somewhat depends on your business, but, you know, just in these next couple of weeks, you know, I'm flying to San Francisco next week. Let's put it this way. Let me give you a week framework. So my Mondays, it's all about the team on Monday. I connect individually with every single member of my team. We have a whopping staff of 6 full-time employees. So we're a small but mighty team. It's amazing what small teams can do, as the SEAL teams continue to prove that model. But you know, we have to connect. Otherwise, we're like ships passing in the night, and that's not fair to your team. So this is something that I incorporated last year, and now we're getting very effective at even what we talk about. So we sit down with an agenda. I start the agenda off with 3 questions, 1 to 3 major questions that I have that I need to learn from them. I need them to teach me about what's going on in their role and how we're evolving. And then we have open item discussions where we talk about our objectives and key results, the obstacles of that. So Monday's a very important team day for us. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday typically is what I'm either on the road or I am meeting with donors. For us, it's all about ROI, not return on investment, but return on impact. Our donors are like family. They're very important to us, and they're getting a return on their impact because they're impacting and investing in human futures. So for us, it's important to stay connected with them in every way possible. Next week, I'll be in San Francisco working with Sequoia Capital on Tuesday for some things that we're working on with them. And then Wednesday, I'll be at Airbnb all day speaking to their staff at their staff all call on number one, the first panel is on culture. Number two, the second panel is on veteran hiring initiatives inside the organization and what we've done with them. And then Thursday, I'm doing one-on-ones. We're meeting with Cisco and PayPal and some other VC and folks out there. And then on Friday, I'll be flying to Seattle to spend a weekend there. Friday, we have a trek happening for the Honor Foundation. A trek for us is when we take 20 to 30 of our graduates and we just bring them into the corporate culture of other organizations. That'll be led by Philip Dana, our chief of people, and our director of operations, Carrie Ann McGovern. And they'll be basically busing around 30 of our graduates to these different companies all week. I have to miss the majority of the week because of what my week looks like. And then on the weekend, I'll be in Seattle all weekend, again, meeting with some folks. A friend of mine just had his company acquired by Amazon. So we're going in to talk a little bit more about the details of the acquisition process. And so I can learn from that and pass the knowledge on to our young entrepreneurs who are building products that eventually will become acquired. Everything circles back to our fellow. Everything we do every week, every day, every hour, it needs to be about our guys and our gals inside the program. It's very important to us that we never veer from the mentality of what's best for the guys. And I could go on and on and on about the rest of the schedule, but it's like the next week I'm in New York City doing a training with the Start With Why folks with Simon Sinek. And then after that, I'm flying back home for a large donor presentation to pitch for our headquarters here in San Diego. So it's really nonstop. And when I say you need to be obsessed, I'm married. I have a beautiful, lovely, understanding, patient wife who knows that this is much bigger than the both of us. So we need to learn how to communicate with each other and learn how to constantly fall in love with each other, because it's hard. It's very hard to do this work.
I love that, man. I love the detail you provide into that. And I just also admire how you seem to be very effective at surrounding yourself with great mentors and advisors, and the thought of meeting with someone of Simon Sinek's caliber, and just with Sequoia and with Airbnb, and constantly getting the best and the brightest around you and your organization to challenge you to be better and to learn from them and just to suck up all of that knowledge and experience. I think that's a great hallmark of great leaders, is that ability to cultivate those relationships and learn from other people. It's just such a great way to accelerate that growth and that learning process.
You know, one thing just to add quickly to that, Thursday is our all-call meeting at THF, and this all-call meeting is 2 hours of nonstop, miles per hour, full speed ahead. Everyone's checking in. We meet as a team. We cover the agenda. And for us, it's like we have the team day on Monday where I'm connecting one-on-one, which fuels the questions and the agenda for Thursday's all-call. But so I forgot to mention the all-call because it's so important to meet as a group and to have FaceTime with that. We zoom in for that meeting. But to your point on surrounding yourself with the best, it was, you know, entrepreneurs leading it, starting up their organization, they should ask themselves this question. If I am the average of the five people I surround myself the most with, and any starting up team, your team is going to be the average of who you surround yourself with. You're going to spend the most time with them, not including your spouse or your family. So don't you want to surround yourself with the best people possible? We're serving the world's most elite veterans on the planet. So we can't do anything second tier. I really put the pressure on, you know, our folks to increase the quality of our education. Hence why we hired and kind of stole a dean from a top 10 business school to be our chief of curriculum. We need that type of mentality. And could we afford those folks? No. You know, I hired up in a big way, but that put the pressure on me to go out and find the funds. So, you know, if you're not applying pressure, nothing gets done. If you're not growing, then you're dying. So, you know, it's a constant balancing act to be in this role. It's a balancing act of pressure and motivation and output and results. And it's really a fun chess game to constantly be playing with yourself and, most importantly, supporting your team along the way.
That's awesome. And I know you're also involved with the next series and the SOF Garage. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but what would you like listeners to know about your experience with these two organizations?
Sure. So I figured out one of my favorite organizations is the TED organization. Obviously, we've all seen TED videos, and I was watching one day, and I thought to myself, wait a minute, like, we have to create something for these operators to see into the future. So everything about the special operations community is about legacy. They talk about what's happened in the past, and they're reverent of all that their teammates have done from the Vietnam War era SEALs, or quote unquote, the green faced men, as they were nicknamed. My board president was a Vietnam era Navy SEAL. I've learned more life lessons from him than you can shake a stick at. But the point being is, legacy was always about looking backwards for the community. So when they got out, when they're transitioning out, they're still looking backwards at that legacy. So for me, the next speaker series, you know, very much like the story I always tell about Roger Bannister, you know, you can't break the 4 minute mile, and then he breaks the 4 minute mile. And then now to date, thousands of people have broken the 4 minute mile. This community just needs to see that it can be done. So I started gathering the success stories of our fellows in the private sector. Everyone from, you know, Darren Evenson, who's director of North American customer experience for Airbnb, to Curtis Lloyd, who's now manning the unmanned driver project in Pittsburgh for Uber, folks like Keith David at Anki, who's building robots. You know, I mean, all these people are formal special operators going into very non-traditional roles. I need their teammates to see what's possible. So the next speaker series was all about, let me show you what's next, not what's past. Because we have very few of our folks going into traditional security positions. We have guys going into Tesla. We have folks going across the country and working on very special projects at JP Morgan, to Goldman, to Google. So we're trying to push them to non-traditional roles to let them know that security is not what's next for you. That's the legacy you left behind, security of our nation, of our families, of our homes, of our freedoms. But what's forward, what's going to match that mission? So that's the next speaker series. The Soft Garage is a pet project for 2016, and it's been kind of carefully being cultivated in my head, and we're building the networks around it, and we will be launching this mid to end of 2017. A quarter of our guys are entrepreneurs. A quarter of our fellows are entrepreneurs. Every class, like clockwork. And so we have nearly 20 of them right now out of our 200 graduates or so, 20 to 30 entrepreneurs. And when you look at what they're creating, they need a support system as well. We're launching VetCon alongside some talented military veteran entrepreneurs, Will Treseder from BMT Capital, Ian Faison, formerly of Victory Media, and these folks we're coming together to build a veteran conference specifically for entrepreneurs. And the Soft Garage is something that's inherently owned by THF because we needed to create something for our folks. So we're going to be hosting an education curriculum over 1 year. We'll be having one workshop once a month, with very diligent follow-up with those entrepreneurs, with milestones to be made. Think of Y Combinator over a year versus 3 months, adding in additional skill sets along the way that are unique to a veteran community. So I'm excited to quietly kind of talk about Soft Garage because it's being cultivated and launched by the end of this year, specifically for Special Operation veterans who are trying to become successful entrepreneurs.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's great to see the energy you have for each of these and how they kind of all play together and reinforce each other. One thing I wanted to ask about is resources. So I'm wondering if you had already mentioned earlier the originals, and I'll add all of these to the show notes for our listeners, but I'm wondering if any other books or podcasts or websites or anything else comes to mind that you would recommend to veteran listeners that might either give them inspiration or help educate them about something for their civilian career.
Oh, of course. If you're not constantly learning, you're talking to someone who at 26 years old, 27 years old, coming out of the SEAL pipeline, I had to Google really what a CEO did. I mean, I don't know what goes into that role, but it's so true. And there's some sort of, I don't know why, but there's some sort of glam around that title. You get yelled at for everything. All of the blame is on you. And the responsibility of running the organization responsibly rests on your shoulders 100%. So failure always ends with the founder and the CEO. And that's a big responsibility I take seriously. So I didn't want to mess that one up. But if you are not reading constantly and listening constantly, there are some books that I think for starting up entrepreneurs that they have to read. To go through the list, number one, 0 to 1. That's a book by Blake Masters and Peter Thiel. That book was very inspirational about the ins and the outs of starting up an organization. Number two, The Hard Things About the Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. This is an incredible book, and It outlines basically what you need to do as a startup CEO. I found great value in Forget a Mentor, Find a Sponsor by Sylvia Ann Hewlett. To me, that's a book that outlines a mentorship role in a very different way. I also loved reading the book Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink and Leif Babb, and both Navy SEALs. These are just some of the books that if you're not reading a book or two, or if you're not reading a book every 3 weeks or a month and choosing a new learning theme for the year. That's how I organize my learning, is I choose a learning theme every new year. 2 years ago, it was on happiness. I read everything I could possibly find out about happiness in the workplace, happiness in life, happiness in just the quality of life. Last year it was on unhappiness. You know, what causes us as humans to be unhappiness? So I had a focus at least about what I read, how I read it, and what I would take notes, and I just publish a small white paper for me to keep at the end of the year. This year for me, it's on artificial intelligence and that type of technology. So I'm kind of funneling everything that I can. I just finished a book called Super Intelligence, which could affect you in many different ways. Me, there were times where I wanted to crawl up in the fetal position in the corner and not come out for a while. And then there were other moments where I was like, wow, you know, we have a tremendous responsibility on our hands, and I would get very fired up and motivated to take part in it. So, you know, another book on creativity by Ed Catmull and Amy Wallace, again, Creativity Inc. Is a great book. You just have to be a consummate learner. I mean, there's, you know, to continue every day thinking that I know nothing is the only way that I know that I'll bring the amount of success that is deserving to the community that has protected our freedoms for, without us ever knowing their name, without ever knowing what they're doing for us in the quiet corners of the globe. We owe that to them. And I say that language specifically. We owe it to them. They won't tell us that, and they'll never say it. But as citizens of one of the of the greatest country in the world, we owe that to them for protecting us. So that's what I mean by reading. And obviously, there's podcasts that, you know, if you don't know about it, you better ask somebody. If you're not listening to podcasts in your car, books on tape. I listen to Gray Matter. That's a podcast put on by Greylock. I listen to Tim Ferriss religiously. If you haven't had his new book yet, Tools of the Titans, you need to do that. I was just recommended Philosophize This, by a Navy SEAL and a friend of mine. So there's just, you have to surround yourself with this knowledge constantly in order to produce the best product possible for the community trying to serve, regardless of what type of entrepreneur you are trying to be. Entrepreneurship is universal.
This is great. And for listeners, I'll add in links to each of those books. I've read 0 to 1 and Hard Thing About Hard Things, which I loved both of those. But I definitely want to check out Forget a Mentor, Find a Sponsor. I think that's one of the areas I think about a lot right now is mentorship and advisors. And so it seems like that would be great. And totally with you on Tim Ferriss. I think that's kind of the gold standard for podcasts right now. And I haven't gotten a chance to read his book, Tools of Titan, yet, but we'll definitely check that out soon.
I'm sure Tim would tell you not to read it and only use it when necessary.
That's awesome.
It's 800 pages. I don't think he'd want anybody spending that much time reading his book cover to cover.
You know, I'm wondering, I think that there's so many positive things we all take away from the military and that help us in our civilian career. I also, you know, think that there's things that we have to unlearn, things that served us in the military that won't serve us outside of the military. And, you know, from your own life or your work with the Honor Foundation, I'm wondering if any of those habits come to mind that listeners might want to consider trying to actively break or change or modify to better serve them in their civilian career.
Oh, for sure. Well, this goes back to the evolution of just a human being, a human. When you look at another great book, which is a phrase, I'm using a phrase, but it's a title of a great book, What Got You Here Won't Get You There. So, what got you to be a success inside of the military, specifically for our community, the Navy SEAL and Special Operations community, won't get you to the next level. That was just a chapter. And to their surprise, it's not even the greatest chapter. So much more is to come. So for us, one thing we talk about, we have a class at THF. It's one of our 27 learning themes, is habits. You have to reevaluate what you've done as a special operator and realize what will benefit you moving forward and what won't benefit you moving forward. And, you know, I could get into specifics, but everyone is so different and everyone habits and lifestyle is so different. But I can tell you this, you know, I don't want the listeners of this program and veterans across the country to fall into this habit where you refuse to change, or change will only happen when the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change. That is a bad place to be. So to recognize that you're not a finished product, that you're not in the last chapter of your life, is so important. I mean, you have to change and evolve your habits as a human being. You have to evolve. What got you here won't get you there. So having that in your head as you transition and recognizing that transition is going to be as uncomfortable as selection. You should be tired. You should be hungry. You should be stressed out a little bit. If you don't feel those things, if you don't feel a sense of urgency, you're doing it wrong. It's the same for entrepreneurs. Tell me the last time, Justin, you had a conversation with an entrepreneur that said, yeah, I'm totally relaxed. I don't even know what I'm doing tomorrow, actually. I'm just so chilled out. Like, yeah, this maybe this will be a good month. I don't really know. I haven't checked the calendar. I don't know what my financial projections are for next month, but I'm sure they're good. It just doesn't happen. Things are done calculatively. They're done with purpose, on purpose, every day. I categorize entrepreneurs only one of two ways. An entrepreneur or an oh shit entrepreneur. My oh shit entrepreneur is, it comes from a statement from my pastor where, you know, if you're a man of God and when your feet hit the ground, the devil is going, oh shit, he's awake. Some good's going to get done today, not in my favor. I just apply that to entrepreneurs. Whose feet are hitting the ground and competition, other folks around the world who are inside of your space going, oh shit, Justin is awake. Like for me, I want to be that oh shit entrepreneur that I'm making that big of a difference in that many lives around the world that people are going, oh shit, he's awake. I want that feeling. I want that to resonate with our fellows, that they can be that person every single day, no matter what career choice they choose.
I love it. I think that's such a great visual of just the power of someone who is trying to change something and trying to create something, and how intimidating that can be. I know we're short on time. I always like to leave the last couple minutes just to make it more open-ended. And I appreciate everything you've shared about starting a company and growing a company and surrounding yourself with great people and challenging yourself. I'm wondering, you know, knowing that you have a veteran audience, what else would you want to share about either personal life or professional life as kind of final words of wisdom for them?
Sure. The first thing I would say is, what might you deprive the world of when you leave your service if you don't give it your all? And that's something we tell all of our graduates who are coming into the program, leaving the program. If you don't give your all, what will you be depriving the world of your talents, your skills, your abilities, and your ability to connect meaningfully with others? So that's the first thing I would say is, you know, don't second guess yourself and your abilities and your capabilities as an entrepreneur inside of a business or an entrepreneur creating your own business, working a part of a startup team. You don't want to deprive the world of your skills, number one. Number two, you need to find your why. If you think you know your why, ask yourself, if someone asked me to recite your why, could you say it? Could you recite it? Could you say, my why is to serve others with honor for life so their next mission is always clear and continues to impact the world in new and extraordinary ways? Could you say that? And if you can't, that means you haven't gone through a process of understanding your why. So, you know, get the book, Start With Why by Simon Sinek. Figure out backwards how you want to do things, what it is you actually want to do, and then discover your why. It's so important to move forward in life, understanding why you are on this planet and how you were carefully designed to affect change in the life of others in a great way. But without your why, it's like driving in a dark road. Without a map and without your lights on, you need to discover your why. So if those are and the third part with all, which all veterans can associate with, put out. You got to put out, man. You need to hustle for your transition. No one is going to give you anything as a result of your service. That is a fact. Just understand it, accept it, revisit the muscle memory you had going through boot camp, going through selection, going through buds, whatever it might be. Revisit that muscle memory of thinking that you can do something impossible and then just do it again. So to recap, one, you need to discover your why for sure, no doubt. Two, don't deprive the world of what you are capable of doing. And three, you need to put out.
This is great, man. Joe, I appreciate, you know, the energy you bring to the conversation and the passion that just jumps through in what you're saying. And just the advice and tactical guidance you're providing to listeners. But I also appreciate all the work that you and your team are doing, you know, that you and your team of six who are doing the work of 60 to help out so many veterans that, as you said, are so deserving of this support. And so thank you for taking the time to speak with me in the Beyond the Uniform community today.
No doubt, Justin, thank you. And I need to do that shout out to Philip Dana, our chief of people, to Jeff Pottinger, our chief of curriculum, to Kirianne McGovern, our director of operations, to Kristen Robillard, our impact officer at THF, who's doing a tremendous job, and our most recent hire, an EOD technician from the Naval Special Warfare community, Mike Turkenkoff, who went through our program and is our first hire straight through. He was honor man, voted on by his peers, and has now joined THF's team. I'm so proud of them. I'm blessed every day to come and work with those types of people.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure they appreciate that as well. And we'll try to connect with one of them as well someday too. It sounds like they're all doing great things and would love to interview them and hear their story. So thank you so much, Joe. I appreciate
it. Absolutely.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyonduniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans, it can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyonduniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyonduniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.